Welcome Dr. Wasim from Canada.
I was asked to talk about, to give an introduction to the church history. I actually had something that I recently presented to a Canadian audience, and I did some modification and addition to that, and I hope it would be useful for your purpose. Coptic means Egyptian. By tradition, it came to mean a Christian Egyptian. The origin of Coptic Christianity dates back to the times of the apostles, and in the book of the Acts, in the day of the Pentecost, there were people from Egypt. And the verse, it says that, "And they were all amazed and marveled, saying one to another, Behold, are not all these which speak Galileans? And how hear we every man in our own tongue, wherein we were born, Parthians and Medes and Elamites, and the dwellers of Mesopotamia and in Judea and Cappadocia, in Pontus and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia, in Egypt and in the parts of Libya about Cyrene, and the strangers of Rome, Jews and proselytes." So at the time of the Pentecost, there were people from Egypt, and those people must have gone back to preach what they have learned in Jerusalem at that time. There used to be a large Jewish community in Egypt. According to Philo, the Jewish Alexandrian historian, nearly a million Jewish people were living in Egypt at the time of Christ. This probably is an exaggeration, but that is what Philo has mentioned. The first Christians in Egypt were probably from them. And it is that same community, the Jews in Egypt, that produced the first ever Greek translation of the Old Testament, which we call the Septuagint, about the year of 70 BC. Septuagint اللي هي النسخة السبعينية, الترجمة السبعينية للكتاب المقدس. St. Mark the Apostle is credited with preaching Christianity in Egypt. He was martyred and was buried in Egypt. His body was later stolen by Venetian merchants in the year 828 Anno Domini. His body was buried later in St. Mark's Basilica in Venice. I just don't mind if any of you would need any explanation to interrupt me, and I'll explain it. When I give this to an English speaking person, it is not the same as to an Arabic speaking person. So feel free to raise your hands and just ask or interrupt at any point, and I would appreciate that actually. St. Mark is considered the first Alexandrian bishop. Later he appointed Anianus, a shoemaker, as his successor. The current Pope of Alexandria, Pope Shenouda III, is the 117th Pope of the See of Alexandria. In the first three centuries, there were four major Christian sees. The word Christian sees is used for Christian churches or Christian bishoprices. The Church of Jerusalem, of course, was the first ever church, because this is where the disciples were. Next, the Church of Antioch. And this is the church that where the disciples were first called Christians. If we read the book of the Acts, chapter 11, verse 26, that's what it says. Then the churches of Alexandria and the church of Rome. Those were the main four Christian sees in Christendom. Christendom, اللي هو العالم المسيحي, the Christian world at that time. What are the contributions of the Coptic Church to Christianity and to the world? There are different contributions. The first is the Catechetical School of Alexandria and some of its brilliant teachers. اللي هي مدرسة الإسكندرية اللاهوتية اللي هي بدأت في إسكندرية. Its major role in formulating the creed, as this is another point that is a major role from the Coptic Church in formulating the creed as we know it now. Its role in ecumenical councils, اللي هي المجامع المسكونية, council اللي هو مجمع ecumenical مسكونية. Its pioneering of monasticism, الرهبنة. Its numbers of martyrs, probably the largest in Christian history. Its missionary work abroad. The Catechetical School of Alexandria. That school was established in the year 190 AD. The first dean was Pantinus. Pantinus, by the way, is the one credited by giving us the Coptic letters as we now use them, because prior to that we did not have those letters, so he used the Greek letters to adapt them to the Coptic letters, and he added 7 letters on top of them. So it is Pantinus who was the first dean of the School of Alexandria that was credited by that. He was followed by Clement of Alexandria, and we always specify Clement of Alexandria because there is another Clement who is Clement of Hadiara, Clement of Rome, who was actually one of the apostolic fathers. So we have to specify that it is Clement of Alexandria. He was the second dean of the Catechetical School of Alexandria. He was subsequently followed by Origen. And Origen is considered basically the father of theology. The word theology before that probably never existed. If there was one person who actually started the science of theology, it would be Origen. He was appointed as dean of the school at the age of 19. His most famous work is the Hexapla, which is an Old Testament publication. It's a translation of the Old Testament that included the original Hebrew Old Testament with 5 different Greek translations in parallel columns, so that if you want to compare the different translations, you have them all alongside each other. He also is credited by writing exegetic books. Exegetic اللي هو التفسير, exegesis اللي هو تفسير الكتاب المقدس. By writing exegetic books for all the scriptures, the most notable was his on the Song of Solomon, or the Song of Songs اللي هي نشيد الأنشاد. And this is one of the few of Origen's books that are still available, and you can actually buy that book. And a lot of the people who write explanations of the book of Song of Songs, they basically take from what Origen has said about it. So we mentioned the Catechetical School of Alexandria, then we mentioned the role of the Coptic Church in ecumenical councils. Ecumenical councils, we have them explained in simple words here, and I just want to explain to you something important. When we talk to lay people, particularly when we talk to people who are from different cultures, about our churches, we should not use big words. And we should not use big, we have to simplify it. And if I use a big word, I have to tell them what it means, so that they can actually digest what I am going to tell them. They can understand it and comprehend what we are saying to them. So an ecumenical council is a council where bishops from the whole Christian church gather to discuss vital doctrinal issues. Doctrine is العقيدة. So doctrinal issues اللي هي أمور عقائدية, and to deal with some incorrect teaching that deviates from the faith, which was once for all delivered to the saints. Al-Iman al-Musallam marratan lil-Qiddisin, as St. Jude mentioned in his epistle, chapter 1, verse 3. The Creed and Ecumenical Council. The first ecumenical council was the Council of Nicaea, اللي هي نقيا, was called by Emperor Constantine to deal with the Arian heresy. It was presided over by Saint Alexander, the Pope of Alexandria at that time. The council appointed representatives to formulate the creed known as the Nicene Creed, and those three are: one was Hosius, Bishop of Cordova, Cordova اللي هي قرطبة في إسبانيا, Alexander, the Pope of Alexandria, and most notably Athanasius, who was not a bishop, who was not a priest, he was the deacon of Pope Alexander at the time, and who is reputed to have fought the Arian heresy more than anyone in the Christian church, and who later became the Pope of Alexandria after Alexander's death. I once was reading a book about Christianity. It was written by one of the previous archbishops of Canterbury, a British archbishop of the Anglican Church. And he wrote something that was amazing. He said, if it wouldn't be for Athanasius, Christianity as we know it today would probably not have existed. The Coptic Church had also a prominent position in the subsequent two councils. In the Council of Constantinople, which was the first among four, in the Council of Constantinople, which was the second ecumenical council, there were four presiding bishops. The first one of them was St. Timothy, the Alexandrian Pope. The subsequent council was the Council of Ephesus. It was St. Cyril the Great, or Cyril, احنا بنسميه عمود الدين, the Alexandrian Pope who presided on that third council, which is the Council of Ephesus. I do apologize for not mentioning Chalcedon or Chalcedonia. I was giving this talk to Western audience. I did not want to open old wounds. But of course most of us know what happened in Chalcedon. At that time there was a lot of envy and I think lots of the other churches, they felt that the Coptic Church is going to be the dominant church, and as somebody explained it, love had departed from the church at that time. There was no spirit of humility anymore. There was no spirit of love, and personality started to get big. And when our personalities get big, Christ disappears, unfortunately. And that summarizes probably what happened in Chalcedon. The next point about the contributions of the Coptic Church to the world is its role in monasticism, الرهبنة. Saint Anthony the Great is considered the father of monasticism. He lived in the Egyptian desert in the latter part of the 3rd century as a solitary hermit. Several other people later followed his example, the other person that had a great influence on monasticism in the whole world was Saint Pachomius, who shortly after Saint Anthony, he started Cenobitic monasticism. Cenobitic monasticism is the in Arabic they still use the word Kononion. والأرى كتاب بستان الرهباني حيلاقي يمكن الكلمة دي مكررة, كلمة كونونيون هي نفسها يعني الكلمة الـ I'm not so sure if it is Latin or Greek. Cenobitic monasticism اللي هي monasteries as we know them today where monks live under supervision of an abbot in a community rather than solitaries in the desert. It was actually that formula of monasticism that spread basically all over the world after that, and a lot of Western monasticism drew its roots from Pachomian model of monasticism. Saint Pachomius' rule influenced all subsequent monastic movements all over the world. Saint Basil the Great, اللي هو القديس باسيليوس الكبير اللي عملنا القداس, he was the bishop of Caesarea, went to Egypt and was influenced by Saint Pachomius and established his rule, اللي هو قوانين القديس باسيليوس. This is, we call it the monastic rules. Established his rule based on Pachomian principles. Another person who came to Egypt is John Cassian, Johanna Cassian, established two monasteries in Lyon, France, after spending several years in Egypt and Palestine studying desert monasticism there. Saint Benedict is the one who established Benedictine monasticism. الرهبان البنديكتية. He derived a major part of his rule from the rule of Saint Basil, who himself studied Pachomian monasticism. Several people from around the world came to Egypt either to study in its catechetical school in Alexandria or to learn from the Desert Fathers. Coptic Church and missionary work. In Ireland there is said to be a tomb for seven Coptic monks in Ballymena. Ballymena is an Irish town who are said to have preached Christianity well before the missionaries of Saint Gregory the Great were sent to Great Britain. Saint Gregory the Great was one of the Roman popes who actually sent missionaries to preach Christianity in Britain, but those seven Coptic monks apparently did preach Christianity in Ireland well before the missionaries of Gregory the Great were there. Another saint who is probably better known abroad than in Egypt, but he is a Coptic martyr, is Saint Maurice. Saint Maurice was from Thebes, من طيبة. He was the commanding officer of the Theban Legion, اللي هو الكتيبة الطيبية, that won a victory for Emperor Decius. When the latter asked them to raise incense to his idols, they declined and were martyred on the Alps, على جبال الألب, between Switzerland and Italy. Today, hundreds of churches and cities are called after his name. I am sure we have all heard the name of Saint Maurice or Saint Mauritius in different modification of his name according to the language. The missionary work in the latter part of the second century, Saint Pantinos, who was the first head of the catechetical school in Alexandria, was sent by the Coptic Pope to India for missionary work, and that's why there is connections the Indian church, that is the Orthodox, Indian Orthodox church, has the same faith as the Coptic church. And I believe their main center is in Kerala, India. Similarly, Origen, who was the third head of the catechetical school, was sent to Arabia for the same reason and to respond to some heretical teachings there. The Ethiopian church is considered an extension of the Coptic church, and it is said that Christianity was preached there by Frumentius, who was thought to be an Ethiopian who studied in Alexandria in the days of Pope Athanasius the Apostolic. Today, the Coptic church has missions in Kenya, in Zambia, in Ghana, in South Africa, and in Latin America, not to mention a growing presence in Canada, US, Europe, Asia, and Australia through the immigration of several of its membership. We move to another contribution of the Coptic Church to Christianity, is the Egyptian martyrs. It is said that during the reign of Diocletian, the Roman emperor who persecuted Christians more than any other, Egypt had more martyrs than all countries in the Christendom. From the 5th century till today, the Coptic Church lived under oppression, with an ever-growing list of martyrs and members suffering in different ways for their faith. The Coptic Church today, it is probably one of the very few churches today that continues in its practices in a very similar fashion as was practiced in the early centuries. Two main recent developments, namely the Sunday school movement and the resurging monasticism in Egypt, had a remarkable effect on a recent revival of the church. A third factor is the growing number of several university graduates dedicating themselves to the service as monks, priests, bishops, or as lay servants in the church. There is one good comment, actually. I heard that from a Western priest. One of our priests was talking about Coptic Christianity to a Western audience, and that Western priest, he told him, "You forgot something very important that the Coptic Christianity is very famous for." And I thought I would mention that to you. And he asked him, "What is that?" He told him that you forgot that it is the Coptic Church that masters something that makes it one of the pioneers in the Christian world, and that thing is repentance. We actually have a lot of stress on repentance in our practices, and it is a good thing to hear that from somebody who is an outsider to our church, that it's an and this is something, I didn't put it in the presentation, but I thought I would mention that to you. There is a lot of debate about the Council of Chalcedon. I did not want to get into it at this point, but if you want more details about it, we actually had a beautiful presentation by one of my colleagues. I serve in the church, Knesset Marie Gerges wal Qaddis Boulos في Montreal. فكان عندنا فصل اعداد خدام ودعينا واحد من الاخوه يكلمنا على المجامع. الميزه في البرزنتيشن اللي هو عملنا وهو كلها على باوربوينت, بس it is a very long presentation. هو he can't summarize anything, he has to give it in بالتفصيل المريح, بس it is available. I can forward that لابونا اذا حد عايز يعرفها. The one good thing he did is that he used original references and original quotations from the Nicene and the post-Nicene fathers were the actual texts. محاضر المجامع دي كلها موجودة available, وموجودة أونلاين يعني for free. كان زمان علشان تشتري المجموعة دي تشتريها بحوالي $800. It's a huge library actually by itself. Today you can buy it on a CD for about $25, and I bought it, and it has actually other things, including the history of the patriarch by Saint by Sawirus ibn al-Muqaffa. They call him Sawirus, the son of the dwarf. That is how. It is actually written in English, translated to English from Arabic. So the series is available, and there is no need for us to have a dispute about it. We can, if we want to go to the original documents are available. And the people who compile this series are Western people, all of them. But it is amazing when you hear their comments. They are very unbiased comments. Some of them are biased, of course, but if you read the whole thing, you will find that the position of the Coptic Church is a very close to the truth. So there will always be people who will criticize anything that happens. There will always be people who will criticize Christianity itself. There will always be people who will criticize the Coptic Church itself. But we have to learn how to be able to look for references and how to get the facts. An interesting thing I did here, because I was talking to a Western audience, I ensured that all the references I used here are from Western sources. I probably hardly used any sources from the Coptic Church. They were, and I'll give you a list of the references afterwards, and it is stored on that presentation, and anybody could have access to it. Because it is important to be able, when somebody says something, I shouldn't accept it the way it is. I have to verify it. We have to check our sources. We have to make sure that they are reputable sources. And this is something I was actually going to talk about at the latter part of the presentation, particularly when you talk to Western people and you tell them, our Coptic historians are saying so and so, they will say, yes, they are biased to the Coptic Church. So if you give them references that they can accept, they cannot make that claim. Continuation of the contributions of the Coptic Church today, the Coptic Church is now an important member of the ecumenical movement. Ecumenical, اللي هي الحركة المسكونية. The ecumenical movement, with ongoing dialogues between the church leadership and the leaderships of other churches, including the Eastern Orthodox churches. By the way, the non-Chalcedonian churches, as we call them, اللي هي الكنائس اللاخلقيدونية, they are called the Oriental Orthodox churches, and that includes us, includes the Coptic Church. It includes the Syrian church. It includes the Ethiopian church. It includes the Indian church. So, and the Armenian church as well. So those are the non-Chalcedonian churches. Those are the churches that do not accept the conclusions of the Council of Chalcedon or Majma Chalcedonia. They are called the Oriental Orthodox churches. The Greek Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox, the Orthodox churches of Eastern Europe, they are called the Eastern Orthodox churches. Then the Roman Catholic Church, there has been dialogues with the Roman Catholic Church and the Anglican and other Protestant denominations. I'll spend a few minutes talking to you about some of the references that I put here, and you, as you might see, a lot of them are Western references. There is a very nice pamphlet that was written by Professor Aziz Suryal Atiyah, who of course is a Copt, and who was the person who basically did the greatest effort in compiling the Coptic Encyclopedia. He wrote a very good article about the Coptic, the title of the article, The Coptic Contribution to Christian Civilization. This actually is a direct web connection. If you receive the actual, you just click on that, you can download the whole article. The article is very small, and it was specifically written for Western readers to give them an introduction to what the Coptic Church is and what did the Coptic Church did to the rest of the Christian Church. Several of the dates and so on can be verified from very easy online references, including does anybody know about the Orthodox Wiki? Orthodox Wiki is a relatively new web page. It is a it is something to copy Wikipedia, which most of us know about. And you can use the Orthodox Wiki or Wikipedia for lots of the dates, because these dates are, when you're verifying dates and names and things like that, and how to pronounce different Coptic names in particular, a lot of us don't pronounce it correctly. Like Saint Mena, for example, he's M-E-N-A-S. He's not M-I-N. You find things like that, and it is important when we are talking to people outside our church that we make sure that we give them the proper pronunciation of the names of our saints and the and so on. Non-Coptic references, foremost, I mentioned Al-Kharid al-Nafisa fi Tariq al-Knisa. There are also other Coptic history books. Unfortunately, they are practically as if you're reading the same copy in the two other sources, الكتاب بتاع أبونا بنسى يوحنا عن تاريخ الكنيسة القبطية, and another book about that is I'm trying to remember its name, that basically copies what is in Al-Kharid al-Nafisa. That's why I didn't mention them as any additional references. Then several Western references dealing with church history in general. Some of the best is a very nice book, and that is a very easy to read book. In fact, that book is taught in several Western universities when they study the history of the early church. I was looking, there are lots of online university courses that teach the history of the church, and this is by Henry Chadwick. It's a very unbiased reference dealing with church history in the first four centuries, and I think you can buy it for about $12 or something like that. So this is, I read that book more than once because it is a very good book about the history of the early church. Another book is again by Henry Chadwick and G.R. Evans. It's a hardcover, and it's a very user-friendly and easy to read history of the whole Christian Church to the 20th century, by the same well-reputed author of the above references. Then we have the Oxford Dictionary of the Christian Church. The Oxford Dictionary of the Christian Church, there's a full edition. It is sold for about $120, $130. And then the concise edition, the concise Oxford Dictionary of the Christian Church, I believe it is sold for about $12 or $13. Something I wanted to share with you is a very good book about the Coptic Church history. It is written by Mrs. Butcher. It is The Story of the Church of Egypt by Edith Louise Butcher. The full Arabic text, by the way, you can download it for free from the internet, and I gave you the reference here. Unfortunately, the reference writes Mrs. Butcher incorrectly. They wrote it Thatcher. It is actually Butcher, B-U-T-C-H-E-R. This is one of the things that it is important that we put the names properly. Good sources to buy good books are Amazon.com and the regional subsidiaries. I don't know if Amazon has a division in Egypt or not. There is a great website to get bargain books from, and this is a website. It is called Book Finder 4U. Four is by the is a number and U is a letter. .com. This web page, if you go there, it will give you comparison of book prices between 130 different online bookstores. It is amazing. It's beautiful, actually. And a lot of times before I buy any book, I check it in Book Finder for you. I have it on my favorites, and it is nice to get an idea about what is the best deal we can get when you buy books. And they give you the price in your own place. Like if you're buying this from Egypt, it will give you the price including the posting wherever you are. I come to the point I was mentioning earlier. Why do we need references? In today's world, with information technology available everywhere, we cannot afford to give false or inaccurate information, neither to our audience in Egypt, in the West, or in the East. We have a duty to verify our references. When I mention a Bible verse, I have to make sure I'm writing the verse properly, with the proper spelling. I have to know how to pronounce everything I say properly. Pronunciation اللي هو النطق, بنطق الكلمة ازاي. And the proper spelling of names, dates, and facts. If we talk to a non-Coptic audience, we should be able to support our information by well-respected Western references. I made a mistake here, it is by, not be. I have a bit of a passion about that subject because it hurts me a lot when we hear people who are giving statements that they cannot substantiate. And unfortunately, in the religious field, this is a very common thing. People make all sorts of fatawi, and it is not right. We have to, when I state that this is from such and such reference, I have to be able to get that reference and show it to the person I am talking to, him or her. In St. Paul's epistle to Titus, he tells him that in all things showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. Titus chapter 2 verses 7 to 8. في كل شيء تظهر نفسك مثالا في الأعمال الحسنة في التعليم مقدما نقاوة ووقارا وإخلاصا وكلاما صحيحا غير ملوم الآية دي أنا بحبها الحقيقة، لأن احنا مهم جدا أن احنا لما نتكلم نقدم في التعليم نقاوة ووقارا وإخلاصا وكلاما صحيحا غير ملوم. يعني لازم نبقى يعني ما ناخدش الكلام كده على علاته. It is very important that we should be able to support what we say. فإذا أنا بحضر موضوع علشان أتكلم لمجموعة، مهم أن احنا طبعا يبقى الموضوع يتقدم بطريقة المجموعة دي يقدروا يهضموه، they can digest, they can understand بالمستوى بتاعهم وباللغة بتاعتهم. الحاجة التانية لازم أبقى عندي الـ references اللي أقدر to support what I say. We should adhere to the proven facts and not make lame statements that we cannot prove or provide a clear reference to them. We should be always prepared to say, I do not know the answer. And I think this is a sign of a person. When you say, I don't know to somebody, they will respect you more, in fact, because they will know that you are not just fabricating the answer to them. So there is nothing wrong in saying, I don't know. I know that there is such and such person who can help you with the answer, and you can actually direct them to that person, or there is such and such book or a reference that we can actually get the answer from, and then we can refer them to that book. But it is better than making up an answer that is not correct. I think that's it. If somebody has any comment or question, I would like to entertain questions.
Somebody may ask why the doctor of history is essential for a preacher.
Yani, simply, somebody may ask why should we as preachers know the Coptic history? What's the importance of the history in our preaching?
At some point, if we are preaching, and this is a very important point that Abuna mentioned, is that when we preach, we're not preaching the Coptic Church, by the way. We are preaching Christ. And my first responsibility as a servant is to bring that person I'm preaching to Christ. Not to know me, not specifically even to the Coptic Church. Maybe I am a little bit excessive in this. But the main theme is that I need to bring him to Christ. Then if I bring him to Christ, he will have to come into the Coptic Church through baptism and through the sacraments of the church. So he will start asking questions. Why do you guys baptize people by immersion rather than by spraying of water? Why do you have communion when other denominations don't have communion? I should be able to respond to him. And as the knowledge of that person grows, that person at some point will probably need to ask us, where did that come from? And we should be able to answer that person, where it came from, what is the historical background. Some people don't ask the question, and that's fine. It's up to them. If they don't want to know, I'm not going to force the information on them. What we need to make sure that we do, we need to bring that person to Christ. And we need to get that person to know Christ. And if they know Christ, we have done our job. But we should be prepared to address the other issues. And that doesn't have to be everybody in the group, suppose a group is actually preaching Christianity in one country or one location, maybe one person may be able to have the ability to discuss these historical matters, and he or she may be able to help with that, and the group can refer the person who wants to know to that individual. But if we are teaching the doctrines that we believe in, at some point the question will come in a non-Coptic audience, and we should be able to deal with it.
Thank you, Dr. Wasim, for the very rich lecture.